This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Residents of Darna piled bodies in front of buildings and in makeshift morgues, lamenting the heavy death toll and the loss of many families in the flooding. Eyewitness reports say that corpses line the streets in many parts of the city.
That was VOA's Edward Yerenian reporting on the massive flooding that has devastated parts of Libya. Details coming up also. Nearly 3,000 are reported dead from Morocco's devastating earthquake. And the World Food Program says shrinking funding is forcing it to drastically slash rations. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Officials in eastern Libya say at least 2,000 people are dead and several thousands others missing after two dams collapsed in the eastern coastal city of Darna, sweeping away large chunks of the city and leaving outlying regions underwater. The dams collapsed under pressure from Storm Daniel, which wreaked havoc across eastern Libya on Sunday. Edward Iranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Torrents of water rushed through the streets and alleyways, causing buildings to collapse and sweeping away vehicles in the eastern Libyan coastal city of Darna. Eyewitnesses say that two dams collapsed near the city, causing the deluge of water that inflicted the massive damage following heavy rain from Storm Daniel, a strong cyclone which hit the area last week. Rescuers carried hundreds of people to safety in eastern Libya's largest city of Benghazi after water surrounded their homes and vehicles. Thousands of people were reportedly missing, and eastern Libya's interior minister told local media that one quarter of Darna was swept away by the flooding. Residents of Darna piled bodies in front of buildings and in makeshift morgues, lamenting the heavy death toll and the loss of many families in the flooding. Eyewitness reports say that corpses lined the streets in many parts of the city, and many others were carried away by the waters. Libyan media reported that the color of the sea along the coast of Darna had become a shade of brown from the muddy waters that flowed from the city into the Mediterranean Sea. A local doctor from Darna's rescue squad, Usama Ali, told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV that many corpses had been taken to the city's Al Gubba hospital, but their rescue workers were trying to bury the dead as quickly as possible to avoid the spread of any diseases. He said that it was unlikely that many of those who were missing would be found alive. Colonel Ahmed al-Masmari, a spokesman for Eastern Libyan military commander General Khalifa Haftar, told Arab media that the collapse of the two old dams caused the torrential flooding. He says that floodwaters filled the mostly dry riverbeds surrounding Darna, sweeping away three bridges that divide the city into two parts and causing several dams to collapse from the pressure of the floodwaters. Interior Minister Issam Abu Zariba told Arab media that several European countries, as well as neighboring Egypt, had sent planes and rescue workers to help local officials try to cope with the flooding and heavy casualties. Eastern Libyan towns and cities from Benghazi to the Egyptian border spent much of the day Tuesday cleaning mud and rubble from many streets that remained impassable from debris carried away by floodwaters. Eastern military commander General Haftar, in a televised address late Monday, called on the country's central bank to release money to provide relief to those who had been hurt by the flooding and to help local officials carry out rescue work. Libya has two rival governments, one in the east of the country and the other in the capital, Tripoli, and political and economic decision-making is often paralyzed by the split. Edward Uranian, VOA News, Cairo.
Rescuers are racing against time to find more survivors in the rubble from last Friday's night's powerful earthquake. The death toll is nearing 3,000 and is expected to continue to rise, with more than 2,400 others injured. Elizabeth Myers, a North African political analyst and lawyer who lives in Marrakesh, about 48 miles from the quake's epicenter, says, aside from the devastation in the rural areas of the High Atlas Mountains, several historic structures were destroyed in her city.
There was significant damage here in Marrakesh in terms of an old mosque in Jemaa el Fna, the main plaza, the main square in the center of the Medina, that was just destroyed. And then also, I understand, part of the Koutoubia, which is the main big mosque in Marrakesh, also had part of its tower fall down. So the devastation, though, in terms of the people who are in the more rural areas, in the mountains, has been incredible. So many complete villages have just been collapsed by the earthquake, and then also by the landslides around them. Many villages now are inaccessible because the roads have collapsed because of the landslides. There's a lot of devastation and a lot of people who are now just homeless. They literally have nothing, just the clothes on their back when they ran out of those houses, the ones that survived.
Is the government even able to get there? Because all these roads we're hearing are blocked.
The government, I understand it, been mobilizing air transport, airlifts, helicopters, and things like that. But I don't have any specific information on the success in reaching these places. It's still early in the efforts. It was such a shock and happened so quickly late on Friday night. And people actually, even here in Marrakesh, in my apartment complex, they're still sleeping outside at night. So individuals are actually doing a lot of individual efforts to mobilize relief supplies, tents. You know, the weather has just turned a little bit cooler here after an incredibly hot summer. The nights are now beginning to be cooler, but I think the real danger is going to happen in another month or two when the weather gets cold and we still have people who are going to be homeless because there's literally nowhere for them to go.
What's the immediate needs of these people right now? Is it food or medical supplies, or what is it?
I would say food and medical supplies are on the top of the list, but there's a lot of efforts both at the government level. I know that there were army trucks that arrived in a town that's about 55 kilometers from here. It's about an hour's drive, called Emizmiz, that was seriously impacted. Government army trucks full of food arrived there yesterday. Individuals are also bringing non-perishable food in their cars. But I think people really do need things like tents, covers to not only to cover themselves at night, but just to sleep on something at night. Definitely flashlights, batteries, really essential supplies that they're going to need. And also baby formula, sanitary products for the women. This is really serious.
Talk a little bit about the terrain of that area that was hit the hardest. What does it look like?
So we're talking about the High Atlas Mountains, but it's a huge swath. So it's not all of them are these high peaks with clear drops, but we're talking about places that are rolling mountainous territory with the dry summer and the drought. We're still in the worst drought in 40 years again this year, with very, very little rain. It's a very rough, rocky, dry terrain with not a lot of vegetation or tree cover.
Are the rescue crews that are there on site still pulling out people, do you know, alive?
I have not heard reports as of this morning or today about people being rescued alive. I know the rescue efforts are ongoing. Yesterday, they were still pulling people out alive.
That was Elizabeth Myers, a lawyer and North African political analyst who lives in Morocco. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Marrakesh, Morocco. Hundreds of workers in Nkouk, a special economic zone in Gabon, are protesting low pay and poor working conditions and asking for the military junta for help. The protests come 48 hours after Gabon's military leader, General Brice Oligui Nguema, announced education would be free. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Gabon's national TV reports that hundreds of disgruntled workers are gathered at the head office of the Special Economic Zone Arncoc this week to protest poor pay and what they call a hostile and stressful work environment. Nkok, near Gabon's capital Libreville, hosts a range of industries, including agribusinesses, chemicals and plastics, pharmaceuticals and timber processing companies. Emile Leokadi Musaji is Gabon's Director General of Labor. She said on national television yesterday that protesters want an immediate improvement in their work conditions.
Jusqu'à ce jour, le revenu minimum mensuel demeure à 150 000. On dit le revenu minimum mensuel demeure.
Musaji says the protesters are complaining that some workers earn less than $100 each month when the minimum wage in Gabon is $250. She says some workers are protesting that they have been working for several years without labor contracts and are either dismissed abusively by their employers or not taken care of when they are ill. Protesters said they are particularly unhappy because foreign workers in the zone, including Indians, Chinese and Europeans, are given special privileges such as lodging, transportation, health care and better salaries. They told Gabon National TV that only a small number of African workers are given special privileges. Ken Terence Ipomga Bodi is the administrator and director general of the Nkok Special Economic Zone.
La législation en vigueur au Gabon prévoit effectivement que des entreprises mettent à disposition.
Bodi says Gabon military leader General Brice Oligui Nguema has given assurances that he will solve all problems raised by the workers within the shortest possible time. He urges the workers to return to work and give Nguema time to improve conditions for all Gabon citizens. Bodi spoke on national TV. The protest began less than 48 hours after the military leader announced government schools would be free when the school year starts on September 18. Nguema said that eventually private schools will be free. Mark Ona Esangi is an activist and founder of the environmental group Brain Forest. He also leads a coalition of environmental groups in Gabon. He spoke via a messaging app from Libreville.
Le Gabon est capable de procéder à la gratuité des frais de scolarité, de payer les bourses à tous les enfants.
He says besides free education, Gabon has huge natural resources which, if well exploited and managed, can also offer free health care and scholarships for school children in the country of less than 2.5 million citizens. Esangi also says that during the six decades when President Ali Bongo Ondimba and his father Omar Bongo Ondimba led the Central African state, the benefits of those resources were unevenly distributed. The military junta says free education will bridge the gap between the rich and the poor that has existed since Gabon got its independence in 1960. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. According to the World Bank, 64 million people in Nigeria did not have an account with a bank or other reputable financial institution last year. But those who do are falling prey to electronic bank fraud or e-fraud. Gibson Emeka has this report from Abuja, Nigeria, narrated by Salem Salamon.
One weekend, Modestar Olochoku's debt card got stuck in an ATM. By the time she returned to her bank during office hours to retrieve her card, her account had been cleared of $750. Olochoku says the bank tells her the fraud is still being investigated and she still has not gotten her money back.
I narrated everything to them. They even opened their CCTV, watching everything. They saw me when I came inside the bank. I even introduced police people. At the end of the day, nothing happened. I wrote letter.
Although the incident happened in 2017, Oluchoku has not given up. Her lawyer, Obodage Francis, says due to the length of time, it might be difficult to recover her money.
So most times, once things like this happen, we say that we advise victims to reach out to a lawyer immediately. So that once that is done, we as lawyers, we know who to reach out to. Like we have to write both banks a letter, freezing the account immediately. Then we also need to reach out to the authorities.
Electronic bank fraud is becoming more prevalent in Nigeria, according to the Nigeria Electronic Fraud Forum, a Nigeria Bankers Committee initiative that aims to tackle e-channel security challenges. The banking sector has already incurred losses of over $12 million in 2023 alone to fraudulent digital and unlicensed transactions, according to the initiative. Cybersecurity analyst Bernard Ogbe points out one area of weakness.
Some of these platforms, their security measures are not strong enough.
Consumers are also losing money through ATM fraud, online swindles, fraudulent emails, and telecom services that help users check balances. And Nigerian banks are dealing not only with increasingly sophisticated fraud, but also with loss of experienced personnel, says financial expert Emmanuel Ogboloko.
Many of the banking staff that were well-trained left the banking sector in Nigeria for greener pastures in Canada and Europe because the reward system there is far better.
According to the World Bank, 64 million people in Nigeria were unbanked in 2022, despite the Nigerian government's push since 2019 of a cashless policy to get more people into the financial system. Ogbe says electronic fraud is discouraging more people from opening a bank account and worries that many people avoid going digital or avoid using technology to exchange money.
The banking fraud can indeed slow down this adoption in several reasons. One, it has to do with loss of trust, lack of security confidence. There are some customers that have experienced this, and there is nothing you will tell them that they will go back.
Experts say that people can protect themselves against e-fraud by securing electronic devices, avoiding public Wi-Fi for financial transactions, regularly monitoring bank accounts, setting strong and unique passwords, and enabling two-factor authentication whenever possible. For Gibson Emeka in Abuja, Nigeria, Salim Solomon, VOA News.
The World Trade Organization, WTO, says deglobalization of international trade is far from a reality, but notes the first signs of fragmentation that could threaten growth and development. The French news agency AFP notes that the idea of deglobalization has gained traction since the war in Ukraine and pandemic-related lockdowns in China disrupted global supply chains. In its annual report on international trade, the WTO says geopolitical tensions are beginning to have an impact on trade flows around the world. It calculates that trade is beginning to split between the West on one side and Russia and China on the other. The WTO warns that the division of world trade into two distinct blocks would cost the world an estimated 5% of real income, with some developing economies facing double-digit losses. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has released its annual Goalkeepers Report, which aims to track progress on the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. This year's report sheds light on the global maternal and newborn health crisis, which affects mothers across low, middle, and high-income countries. In sub-Saharan Africa, it is estimated that 390 women will die in childbirth for every 100,000 live births by 2030. Maternal mortality rates have increased in recent years in America, especially among black women. Melinda French Gates, co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, tells VOA's Lenore de Moudou progress is possible in reducing maternal and infant deaths. Among other things, new innovations have emerged that could save millions of lives.
Well, we decided to bring this issue forward this year, the importance of maternal mortality and newborns, because the world has made so much progress on under five deaths of children, But yet that first 30 days of life, and in fact, the first day a baby is born, is the most dangerous day for the baby. And we're still losing 800 moms a day to maternal mortality. So we looked at the data from around the world. We have a number of researchers. One of them is Institute for Health Metrics. And we said, this is data that people need to understand so that the world can do something about it.
According to the report, the world has the tools and innovations to prevent maternal and childhood death. Yet these innovations are not reaching everyone. What are some of them?
Well, some of the innovations that we highlight are things like intravenous iron. A doctor in Nigeria who has come up with a way to do IV iron, which only takes 15 minutes for an infusion. And what we know is that it makes a woman less likely to hemorrhage during childbirth. That's a fantastic innovation that should be scaled up immediately. Azithromycin, which is a very common drug, something a lot of us use even if we get some other infection, it's low cost. It could be given to moms so to prevent sepsis at the birth of a child. One other thing in the report, we highlight seven interventions, but another one is a very simple drape, a surgical drape that put under the mom right after childbirth, that it's called Emotive, that can literally measure how much blood a mom is putting out or hemorrhaging from to know whether the doctor, the obstetrician, needs to intervene right then. So we look at these key interventions that can bring down the most death in women, and we make sure that all of them are ones that can easily be used in low and middle income settings.
And what can countries do to ensure that women in the most remote places have access to the care they need and to new innovations?
Well, several things that countries can do. One is they can make sure that there are enough midwives in the country that are well-trained. They can look at their regulations to make sure that these innovations as they come out, this one that's coming out from Nigeria on intravenous iron, that it doesn't necessarily have to be a doctor that gives it, that it can be a nurse or a midwife who can give it. So changing the regulation of who along the chain can actually do the intervention, that's another important thing that can be done. Making sure that women not only know they need to get to the healthcare facility before they enter labor, but making sure the community knows and makes a plan for that. I've seen that done in Malawi, and it's made a huge difference that women get to the healthcare center early. They can learn about other things that can help their children and their babies, but then they're not caught in a rainstorm where there's no motorcycle available to take them. That's when they get in trouble in terms of the delivery.
This is the seventh Goalkeepers report. What is your assessment? Where have you seen the most progress, and where do you think a lot more needs to be done?
Well, we saw amazing progress on reduction in poverty. We saw amazing progress on reduction in under five deaths, age five deaths for children. Now, the pandemic set us back, and we have to be honest about that. It wasn't something anybody in the world was expecting, but we're starting to see people, you know, are definitely going back to the health system. We're seeing the health systems revitalize. So progress is possible. I worry the most, quite frankly, about gender equality. I see all over the world that places have made excuses and set gender equality back instead of the forward momentum. And that's the one that worries me the most.
So what is your message or the main takeaway regarding the Goalkeepers Report 2023?
800 women should not die a day in childbirth. We can address this. We know how to address it. And we don't need so many babies to die in their first day of life. We as a world know how to save these lives. And guess what? Every life is important and it's worth saving.
That's Melinda French Gates, co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. She was speaking with my colleague Lenore Mudu from Seattle, Washington. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Bob Bass, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.